Hello and welcome back to the Pop and Bottles Dadcast. No Nick again because it's part two and screw him.
Hi Nick.
So, we love you, Nick. Anyway, part two of my conversation with the lovely Nancy. Welcome back to the show, Nancy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you once again.
So in the previous episode, we were talking about the type of upbringing that you had, the what culture was like at that time, and the kind of stuff that was demanded of you as a woman at that time, that sort of thing. Yeah. So I kind of want to take a step forward into the more modern era where we're still dealing with these kinds of issues.
Amazingly enough.
And, something that I was talking about, briefly while we were off mic. It's something that I've noticed and has interested me, and I wonder what you think about it, is a lot of the more recent education that, like, my generation has gotten as far as what it was like for a woman, during the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. Has been portrayed through the show Mad Men.
Yes.
And they don't pull any punches. They really go for a lot of, everything from little everyday stuff to really heavy-hitting issues they've covered in that series, which is great. That they have included all of that in that life space for those characters and that sort of thing. But it sort of opened the eyes of a lot of, especially young women in my generation, as to the fact that a lot of that attitude still exists today.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Mad Men?
I've never actually watched Mad Men, okay. But I've heard quite a bit about it, and it doesn't surprise me that they would use the way women were treated during that era as part of the storyline, because it was such a big part of everyday life for women.
Yeah.
That level of discrimination and that level of, here you are, you're talented and you're smart and you deserve to be treated better, but you're just not getting treated better.
Right.
Because it is a male-dominated culture. To give you, I don't know if this would help, but talking about the women in my family, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, Marie Joseph Allen, she was actually an indentured servant.
Really?
In the United States. She was Irish,
right.
Strict Catholic, and she was sold to another family to work their farm and be their maid and help raise their children.
Wow.
And she ended up marrying a guy and treated badly all of her life. But she relied very heavily on her strict Catholic upbringing and her Irish upbringing. And so my mother, who was raised in this environment, like I said, she was raised in Bryn Mawr in the main line, she didn't know where babies came from until she was 18 years old.
Right.
Her mother never sat her down and had that discussion because it wasn't talked about. And it wasn't until she met my father, and as I understand it, my father was an usher at the Ardmore Movie Theater and had to change into his uniform in the back of the theater before the performances, and there's a good possibility that my brother might have been conceived in the back of the Ardmore Movie Theater. But she became pregnant. And she didn't know how it got there until...
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, she didn't know how it worked.
Yeah.
And then once she was pregnant, she became extremely fearful because she didn't know how the baby was getting out. And all her mother would tell her was that it came out of the doctor's bag. The doctor brought the baby in the doctor's bag because my grandmother had all of her children at home,
yeah.
Right? Nothing was talked about. But my mother, being the wonderful mother that she was, when it came time for me, she sat me down and she explained it. And she explained it as well as she could, what it was like. And I so appreciated that. So appreciated that her honesty and her ability to get beyond her upbringing and educate her daughter.
Which, by the way, I'm super thankful that that we have talked about such things. Because I think if we hadn't, I wouldn't have been as cucumber chill as I was in the delivery room for Emma. Because there was a lot of things going on. And, you know what? I thought I was going to cry at one point, but I kept it all together.
I have to apologize. I'm publicly apologizing to my children.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Well, you know, we have these catchphrases in our relationship, which I think pretty much symbolize what we're talking about on a weird level. There were a lot of phrases that we used with you guys. One of them was keep it covered, which meant keep it covered.
Yeah.
We don't want any unplanned pregnancies walking through the door or whatever, you know.
Other people of my age would call it wrap it before you tap it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There was also the torture that we imposed on you with the other two phrases I'm thinking of was, all of my children have to become rich and famous and support us the rest of our lives.
Right.
No pressure there, right?
No. Yeah.
And the other one was the phrase I made you guys memorize, and this is horrible.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Horrible, yeah. Horrible. But the boys would be asked the question, who is this woman? Referring to me. Who is this person standing here? And my children were trained and required to respond, my most sainted mother without whom I could not survive.
Yeah. I mean, on a certain level, it's true.
Yes, thank you for that. The throne can be delivered anytime.
Exactly. The memorial statue will be in marble.
I did say I wanted a life-size statue on my grave. Right. Yeah, with flowers delivered daily and a bench where you guys could come visit and talk to me.
Right, yeah.
And I'm sorry for all of that. But it was my twisted way of trying to pat myself on the back a little bit and let you guys know that, yeah, you're going to have to support us the rest of our lives because, and you're discovering this yourself, as a stay-at-home mom, and I stayed home primarily because two things. First of all, Ian was very sick.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work during those times because he needed me there. Mm-hmm. He needed me there. And I don't regret it ever for a second. But secondly, I don't get paid anything for being a stay-at-home parent.
Yeah.
I don't have this pile of money sitting in Social Security waiting for me at the end.
Right.
And so what am I going to do? Well, guess what? You guys have to become rich and famous to support me the rest of my life. And, you know, taking care of my mother was a particular struggle. Thank God my brother in Florida was able to financially support her.
Yeah.
Because that's all she had was the little bit of Social Security she earned for the years that she was able to work.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly she went to work after my brother died. We discussed a little bit about my brother dying when I was young. It was part of her psychiatric recovery.
Right.
Her psychiatrist told her to go out and get a job to keep her busy.
Yeah.
And so she wouldn't be sitting around the house thinking about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she also had to go through the 1963 version of electroshock therapy, which they were absolutely convinced would make her completely forget about my brother, which it didn't, of course.
No mother
forgets a child.
Yeah, and it goes right back to, that scene that pops in my head every once in a while from the original the Earth Stood Still.
Right.
You got a whole bunch of, guys in lab coats, mm-hmm. presumably doctors,
right.
who are studying this alien guy who mm-hmm. is super healthy, right?
Right.
And they're all sitting around puffing cigarettes talking about how, well, their medicine is probably far more advanced than ours.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Craziness.
And you guys, you stay-at-home dads, you're experiencing the same thing. Nothing has changed much in that area. You're at home taking care of the house and the kid and everything, and you're not getting anything for it.
Right.
You know, down the line, this is going to hurt you if Social Security still even exists when you get to 65 or whatever.
Yeah.
What's going to be there for you? And why is that still the norm? Why isn't there some compensation within this system for people staying at home with their kids?
Well, you know, not to get overly political or anything like that. But, you know, we've had a recent setback in the thought process of, how do we say, our government and how they take care of people.
I don't know if I would use the term recent setback as an absolute reversal. We have been working all of these years, and we still have not achieved equal pay.
Right.
And right. all of that, and it's still hanging over us like this big, ugly old head, and we can't seem to get past it. I've had conversations with women who are much more confident than I am, who will tell you straight to your face that they don't need government regulations for them to get equal pay or equal respect. They will go out and get it for themselves. And I so admire women that can do that.
Right.
Yeah. I never had that level of confidence, nor did I have that level of education to sit back on and say, I've got this.
Yeah.
Mad Men, definitely, you know, the way the women are treated mm-hmm. in that show.
Yeah, and treat themselves.
And treat themselves, yeah. because this is the way you were trained to think.
Which, by the way, just quick interjection, one of our favorite shows is The West Wing.
Oh, I love The West Wing.
And the actress who plays Zoe mm-hmm. is one of the yes. female leads,
yes.
and she does a fantastic
yes.
job.
And like, look at how she jumped from craziness. One so highly over-educated, highly educated young woman
yeah
to
yeah,
this series where
right.
women are not dominant and not educated
right
and how much of that is a reflection of our generation, the Woodstock generation, the feminist movement generation,
mm-hmm.
how much of that is a reflection of what we were able to accomplish and not accomplish
right.
for women and men?
Yeah. So as far as those accomplishments go and the things that have remained the same, you know, when you started out as a mom, it was the late 70s, mm-hmm. going into the 80s, and then you guys had Ian.
Yeah, cute.
He's so cute with his huge forehead. Anyway, and then for some reason, you decided to wait a decade.
Practically a decade to have you.
To have me.
Yeah.
So what was it like from your perspective, having grown up as you did and that sort of thing, as far as, you know, at the same time as I was in high school, Ian was in college.
Yes.
And by that time, a lot of things had changed, and a lot of things hadn't changed. Like, what was your viewpoint from that perspective? You know, having been through what you've been through, and raising kids through the 80s and then the 90s and that sort of thing, and mm-hmm. seeing that transition, you know, to whatever it was like by the time that I got to high school and Ian got to college.
Well, let me think. Your brother Frank, your stepbrother Frank.
Yeah.
I actually got pregnant before we were married. And that's a long story and a funny story.
Right.
But
that was 78? 77?
Yes. 78? Okay. And you have to realize this is all post Roe v. Wade.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I had the ability to make the decision whether or not to keep the pregnancy.
Right.
Although you were still treated pretty badly if you were going to get an abortion, even as a white woman in a suburban community, you
mm-hmm.
were treated like garbage.
Right.
There were secret codes used when you checked into the hospital. You were skirted away
mm-hmm.
and hidden in a locker room somewhere and then brought up to the operating room and redeposited, you know,
right,
to recover. You didn't recover in the recovery room. You recovered in the laundry room or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was even, like I said, post Roe v. Wade. But I made the decision to get married and continue the pregnancy. And I got very sick. It was the one and only time in my life that I was hospitalized because of asthma.
Mm-hmm.
Was when I was about 3 months pregnant with Frank. And so I'm in the hospital, and I'm in, of course, a shared room. The woman next to me had just had a baby and all that.
Yeah.
But because of the stigma of being pregnant still in the late 70s, you know.
Right, yeah.
Right, we're post-Woodstock and the feminist revolution and all that.
Right.
And I'm in this hospital room, and my husband at the time came in to see me, and we're talking about wedding plans. You know, the typical wedding plans. Oh, you got to call the limo guy. You got to do that. Call the florist, do this, do that, you know, because I'm in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he left. And even my doctor referred to me as Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I wasn't really married. And so my husband left, and the woman in the bed next to me, she's not even looking at me. She just starts yapping at me. So, you got pregnant. And she did a good 10 minutes. Which was followed up by a strange woman coming into the room with a red rose and presenting it to the woman in the bed next to me and congratulating her on her decision to carry her pregnancy to term.
Right.
And this is the attitude we're dealing with. Then I get divorced. I meet your dad, who's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I get pregnant before you. And again, you know, decide to keep the baby and get married. And we've had a very great and successful marriage all these 35 years. But the decision to wait between you and Ian.
No, it's okay. I was a surprise. It's fine. You can say it.
Eight
it's fine.
Years I waited for you. But that was because I had the ability to control my reproduction.
Right, yeah.
You know, I could take birth control pills and I could use the IUD and anything that it took because we weren't in a financial position to have another child. We made that decision to wait until we got out of that little house in Stonehurst and moved on to the next place.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, boy, were you perfect.
Well,
my gosh, you were so worth the wait.
I don't know. The delivery story isn't great. But we can skip that for
now.
We can
skip that part. Nobody wants to hear that. Just, it involves a very angry pregnant woman and some beer and Super Bowl. We
right,
just won't go there. Anyway.
Spoiler alert, Joe Montana won. Another one. Okay? All right? Okay.
But yeah, that dichotomy still existed. As a woman, I had a certain level of control over my life.
Mm-hmm.
My reproductive life and but I was still stuck as a secretary.
Right.
I could have maybe gone to college, but again, the perfect child thing came into play in my mind. I had to be a mother. I had to be a wife because that was the greatest demand. You know, Dad was working, but like your father said, he did spend a year as a stay-at-home dad because I was able to earn more money than him and get benefits because I was working for Wyeth Pharmaceuticals at the time. And take care of business that way.
Mm-hmm.
And how he was treated the first time he ever went to a Tupperware party was too funny. They could not figure out why this big man with the beard was sitting in there looking at cupcake holders.
And I got to tell you, I have been in Wawa wearing my Philly Dad's Group shirt.
Uh-huh.
And it's on the back of it, it says... a community of active fathers in the Philadelphia area.
Right.
And I have gotten smiles from older women.
Yes.
And looks, you know.
So, uh-huh.
And a couple of them have actually come up and said to me, like,
yeah,
that's cute.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, I'm glad you think it's adorable. Let me tell you about all the things we
I
do.
I take it very seriously.
Yeah.
You know, your father will tell you how his cupcakes at school, at elementary school, were the best ever. The
right.
teachers praised
yeah.
him for days about how wonderful his cupcakes were, and he'll tell you why.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate to find him.
Wait. Did he put a little something special in the cupcakes?
No.
Oh, okay.
He made them half the size.
Right.
And he took all the wrappers off before he delivered them
to
the school. So the teacher didn't have to deal with half-eaten cupcakes and cupcake wrappers.
And years later, Entenmann's would copy that.
Exactly.
Exactly. You know.
And we could have made a fortune. But I was so fortunate to have met him. And have him fall in love with me. And be willing to be that partner. Willing to be the stay-at-home dad. And I heard him talk about this before. And he questions whether or not he was good at it. I will tell the world that I have not cooked a meal in 35 years.
Right.
And that's pretty much true. I am a terrible cook. I managed not to kill off my first husband with my cooking.
Right.
But my kids will tell you that my specialties are Kraft macaroni and cheese and hot dogs.
And baking, though.
And baking. I'm a killer baker.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Anyway.
But the fact that he has stepped up to the plate and done all the cooking and done as well at it as he has and really got us through some tough times, kept you guys really well fed.
Right.
You know. And the fact that we were comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And we didn't have problems switching in and out of the roles.
Right.
You know. Was he the world's greatest stay-at-home dad? No.
Well.
I would still have to come home and do the laundry and clean and,
right.
you know. But he was taking care of business in a way I needed him to take care of business.
Right.
And that was a great relief. It really was.
So is being in that situation kind of, you know, For as long as you guys have been in that situation leading up to, you know, the time period we were talking about with me in high school, Ian in college.
Yeah.
Did being in that situation for as long as you guys were being able to, you know, trade off like that and that sort of thing, change your views at all as far as your son's going off into the world as their own, you know, human beings?
I felt they were better prepared.
Okay.
The fact that we tortured you and sometimes made you sew your patches onto your Boy Scout uniforms, it wasn't because I didn't want to do it. It's because you needed to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
The fact that Dad taught you how to cook and not me.
Right.
One of the games that your brothers used to play, this was long before you got into the picture, when we lived in Stonehurst, the laundry game.
Yes.
You've heard about the laundry game. The laundry game was, we lived in this row home, and so the washer and dryer were in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And with kids and working parents, you got a lot of laundry. There's
yeah.
no doubt.
Yeah.
So your brothers, in their infinite wisdom, devised this game to help me with the laundry.
Mm-hmm.
One would be at the bottom of the basement steps.
Right.
One would be at the top of the basement steps. And the person at the top of the basement steps was allowed to throw the dirty laundry down onto the person at the bottom of the steps.
Right, yeah.
And the kicker, the kicker of this game was...
Hold on. Now, I remember this because Ian and I started playing this game.
Yes.
Because we started playing this game, not on New Hanover Square Road, the house before that in Pennsburg.
Yes.
Because it would have to go from the second floor to the
yes.
first floor, to
yes.
the ground floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was, you know...
The feature of the end of the game was the dad underwear toss. Now, I know this sounds like pretty gross, and how could I do this to my kids, but
right.
you know what? My kids learn how to do laundry.
Exactly, yeah.
They learn how to get it downstairs, and they learn how to wash it and dry
right.
it and get it back upstairs.
And we made it fun.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not like we were out doing drugs or kicking dogs or, you know,
exactly.
sticking our hands in poop because,
exactly.
you know, because we felt like it.
And Dad taught you guys to cook.
Right.
And Dad taught you how to drive. because I couldn't stand being in the car with you during those moments. We have had and continue to have an equitable relationship that is not determined by gender role.
Right.
And it's fabulous. And I wish all of you could could have that experience. It is a true partnership. And when I talk about, oh, you know, they taught me how to cook and clean and I was told I was stupid and all that stuff, those skills still play today.
Yeah.
And those skills are so important that you can't help but look at it from both perspectives. Yes, it had its downside.
Right.
I didn't like being told that I was stupid or that I was less than a person just because I was female.
Right.
But this is so important
to
the continuation of society and community. And, you know, it seems so basic, but it really is the whole making you a responsible citizen thing.
And I would like to point out one thing for the internet out there, pricks. there has been a lot of internet trolling chitter-chatter over the past couple of years about the millennial generation and how lazy we are and how, what's the word? What's the word they like to use? Entitled we feel to certain things and how we don't know. I don't feel that way.
Okay.
But, and how we don't know those skills. You know, it's something that we try to point out on a larger scale is, you know, and it's, I have had many, many discussions with many people of my own age about these things, especially now that we are of an age where we're now living on our own and, you know, getting married and having kids and that whole thing, where basically, if their parents had taught them how to do it, then they would be doing it more often. But now it's one of those things where it's treated as, because, you know, this is a perspective that they got from their parents, was that it's shit work, basically.
Yeah, but it's necessary to your survival.
Yeah, it's necessary to survival, but there's that sense of, you know, put it off as long as you possibly can because it's gross and it's disgusting, you know.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing that, you know, like I said, a lot of people in my generation now that we're coming into this era of adulthood, you know, we're now learning the hard way.
Right.
Which, you know, that there are a lot of things my generation is now learning the hard way.
Anyway. But you talk about that time period when you were in high school and Ian was in college.
Right.
That was the time period also for me that I actually got to go to college for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
I only got to go for 2.5 years, but I was also working full time while a full time college student. And I managed to be a National Honor Society member. I was damn smart. Okay. And I was very proud of myself, and I proved to myself that I could do it and that I wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
And so your aging, your independence as a high school student, and Ian's independence as a college student helped me because I was able to step out of the house and sort of leave you guys behind now. You were on your own.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you, incredibly, you were working like 3 jobs at and going point, to yeah. school. And Ian, too, was in one of the toughest schools you'll ever want to be in,
right?
As far as curriculum is concerned. So I was very proud of the two of you, of the three of you. Frank was incredibly well-educated and well-driven, you know, to his personal goals.
Yeah.
All of you were. And so that really freed me up. So my being a good parent, quote-unquote, being a good parent and getting you guys to that point where you were educated and you could be on your own and take care of yourselves freed me.
Yeah.
And that was just one of the more beautiful moments of my life. Yeah. Being able to go to college, be able to read those books and those textbooks and hear people speak about subjects that, wow, you know, yeah. Just amazing.
And, I mean, not to get too squishy here, but I want you to know how proud of you we all are.
Oh, well, thank you.
For having you as our mom.
I still want to get that doctorate and jump up and down on your uncles.
True, yeah.
I think, be in their graves when I do it.
You know, I think as far as that's concerned, we all have a certain level of appreciation and understanding of the size and location of the pile of sand that they can go pound.
They would never hold it against me. They would be cheering me on. They are wonderful brothers, and they have always been loving and supportive of me. However, but I have to tell you, I was talking to our friend Kathy Matheson, actually, about all of this.
I haven't talked to her in a long time.
Talk about a woman who suffered the slings and arrows of discrimination.
Yeah.
Here is a woman who, she's a slightly younger than I am, maybe about 8-9 years younger, and she had a serious interest in auto mechanics as a teenager. And she got out of high school and, you know, did things. But around the age of 23, she decided that this interest for her was really important.
Right.
That it was a love. She is really great at mechanics.
Yeah.
And so she decided to put herself into school at Lincoln Tech. And she did very well. She was a prized student and was great at her job. She couldn't get a job because she was a woman. Right. And they didn't look at women as car mechanics or diesel truck mechanics, diesel engine mechanics. But she got a break. She got her first job at Potamkin Chevrolet.
Okay.
Only because the manager there happened to be a substitute teacher at Lincoln Tech. And he remembered her, and he saw her name on a job application. And he admitted to her that his first thought was, there's no way I'm going to hire a woman to be a mechanic.
Right.
But when he realized who it was and remembered how skilled she was, he hired her.
Yeah.
And he put her with other mechanics who were sympathetic to teaching women and working with women in that field. However, as she progressed, the men did not. You know, she ended up being a fleet mechanic for a PGW, and she was being harassed.
Mm-hmm.
She was being called all kinds of things, and men purposely sabotaging her work to make her look bad. Why? In that, you know, we get through the 70s, women are supposed to be, you know,
right?
And we still have that attitude, and we still have that attitude in the 21st century, and it boggles my mind. It really does.
Us too.
You guys are getting better at it.
Well, you know.
You know, how many couples do you know in your age group who either both parents are working, you know, and one parent is taking on the responsibility, the primary responsibilities of home, you know? The wife's out, and she's got this career, and you come home from work, and you've got to get dinner on the table because you got kids, and the kids have athletics after school and all that stuff. Somebody's taking care of business.
Yeah.
You know, and as a couple, you are working toward that goal we talk about, which is you get your kids to a point where they are independent citizens and independent people.
Yeah.
And then you can pick up, sort of.
And, you know, considering everything as far as, like, advances in certain areas and how something, you know, other things are still the same, I think that may be the greatest accomplishment of, I suppose, your generation as parents, as far as the movement to be, you know, less sexist, or to try and eliminate it, is that now it is far and away much more common for there to be that shared level of responsibility.
right,
with husband and wife. And you know, to a certain extent, though, that was helped along on a financial, from a financial perspective, you know, with the economy going through as much shit as it's been through since the 90s, that, you know, to a certain extent, to be able to afford a home and have kids and be able to live comfortably,
right,
you have to both work.
Right.
And that kind of puts you in a position to share those responsibilities. But it rarely, very, very rarely in any of the conversations that I've had with people, has it felt forced to them. It's always been, for at least them, a very voluntary thing of, yeah, let's work together as a team. And when we work together as a team, mm-hmm. as a couple,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have more success as a family like that.
My parents, and you look at the progression of men and women over this time period, my father was one of those men who, you never showed emotion.
Mm-hmm.
He was not allowed to cry.
Yeah.
Especially in front of other men. He wasn't supposed to do housework. You know, he didn't do the cooking and the cleaning because men just didn't do that thing.
Yeah.
My mother did everything and worked to help support the family because we needed the money.
Yeah.
And as it progresses, I find it sort of interesting that here we are, you know, watching Super Bowl 51, and dads are being celebrated.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Stay-at-home dads in particular are now being celebrated in our advertisements. And yet, we still have to have commercials, like the Audi commercial,
mm-hmm.
where we are still fighting for our daughters.
Yeah.
Why in the world are we still at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we reverting? Why is it getting worse? Well, we can discuss politics, current politics.
Right.
But why did that mindset rear its ugly head again?
Yeah. Do you think it comes in waves, maybe?
I think there are swings of the pendulum, yes.
Okay.
And I'm really looking forward to the pendulum swinging back towards center.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting ongoing political discussion, you know, over the internet and its wonders.
Mm-hmm.
That this is... let's put it this way. It is so far of a pendulum swing in the other direction,
mm-hmm.
That it's going to break that part of the clock.
That's my concern.
You know, and then...
that it's going to take my grandchildren and possibly my great-grandchildren to reverse the effects again.
Yeah.
And the fact that even with all of this knowledge and all of the technology and all of the sensitivity that has come over my lifetime, it still has not reached the potential of getting women equal pay for equal work and getting time at home with your family, either as a male or a female, to take care of business at home, you know, to be there for your kids and your spouse or your, whatever. Why are we still stuck?
Yeah.
With all of this knowledge that we have and this compassion that we have, we are still stuck and we are still marching on Washington for basic human rights.
Mm-hmm.
The rights that black people were getting beaten on national television for.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be treated equally. We're putting our lives on the line here, people, so that we can all be treated equally.
Yeah.
They were fighting not just for themselves, but for me, because I was a woman. Mm-hmm. Why are we still stuck here? That is the question.
Yeah.
And that is a question for your generation and your kids' generations to answer and to try and correct.
I hope we can.
Well, the old people.
Right. We, the old people of the United States of America.
We are more than willing to talk about our experiences and what we think, but we are sort of limited in, you know, what we can do. In 1968, I was more than willing to march on Washington get my head beat in.
Yeah.
Now, no. I'm old.
The bones are a little more fragile than they used to be.
The bones are much more fragile, and I'm pretty sure my insurance company won't cover my injuries, you know, kind of thing.
Soon they're not going to cover much anyway. So
exactly, you know. Exactly.
But you know, this is a topic of discussion That's not only just important, but if anybody is wondering why, if anybody out there is curious why as to this is a Papa Bottle's Dadcast discussion, it's a parenting discussion in general. And, you know, we are in, and Nick and I are gonna talk about this more as well, with each other. You know, we are dads of a particular generation, to daughters.
Yes.
And especially with everything going on right now, we have to take very careful consideration of what the future is going to be like for our daughters. And, what are the things that we can do to fix it?
The thing is that you love your kids. You love your kids.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if they're female or male.
Yeah.
And you're going to treat them the same, and you're going to raise them the same and educate them. And that is such a fabulous thing. So different from my generation
from
and my experience.
Yeah.
And stay-at-home parenting should be celebrated, whether it's a mom, a dad. It doesn't matter. The gender of the parent. It should be celebrated. And I'm glad to see that dads are being celebrated for their potential.
Yeah.
You know, for this role.
Right.
It's a difficult role. It's hard being home and raising kids and doing, you know, it is difficult. It is a challenge. But when you get it, it's a beautiful thing. You guys are the most beautiful, wonderful thing I've ever done.
Oh, thanks.
You are.
Gee, thanks.
You are.
And you also haven't killed our father, so
yes,
you know.
But I have to also say, and because I'm your mother, I'm going to say it. We got you there. The fact that you guys have embraced what we taught you,
right,
and have made the lifestyle choices that you have for yourself is all on you.
Right.
Could have gone anyway. Could have gone either way.
Well, you know that's a credit to you guys as well, because, and you know, it's something that we've talked about on this show before, and that sort of thing is, you know, and I've talked a lot about with you and Dad, is the way that you treated us as we grew up, you know.
Yes.
I think, you know, on average, the age that parents typically have the conversations about alcohol and sex and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
We had a good 10 years earlier than everybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to say that you never lied to us, because I'm sure that there were times where, like, no, that thing is broken. Go to
Santa
bed.
Santa Claus.
You know? Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Easter Bunny.
but, you know. Oh, we're almost out of time. But, you know, whenever we ask questions, you answer them. And treated us like human beings instead of children.
And I apologize for all the times that you get the impression that I think you're stupid. When I call you up on the phone or text message you and say, it's going to snow. Be careful out there. it's my issue, because I keep thinking that I'm still sort of parenting and I have to make you informed. I have to make absolutely sure you're informed so that you'll be safe and healthy and happy, you know, and I apologize for that.
No, don't apologize for that, because now that we are parents.
Yes.
Damn it if we're not going to do the same thing, you know,
but
because,
I also have to mention something, and I know this is, you know, not a visual thing, but the entire time that we've been having these conversations,
there's
a great dichotomy going on.
Oh, yeah.
You have your man bun up
I
on
know,
your head
right?
with your daughter's little hair scrunchie.
I know. Well, you know.
I love it. I love it. And I think it's a great symbol.
Her hair scrunchies are great.
It's a great symbol. It really is when you think about it.
Yeah, I feel it. All right, well, we gotta cap this one off. I got 50 seconds left.
I love you, Ben.
I love you too. And thank you for chatting with me on this.
Thank you for asking.
And we'll talk about it again soon.
Okay.
All right. Because Lord knows there's some shit going down over the next couple of years. So.
Yeah, I'll get my placards out.
Or you'll go old school and get the shillelagh, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's effective.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for coming on the show. Sorry, Nick. Haha. You didn't get to be
we
here.
We still love you, Nick.
We still love you to a certain extent. Prick. All right. See you next time.